ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते Chapter 1, the first step in God realization, text number 15. Antakale tu purusha,
antakale tu purusha,
agate gata sadvasaha,
chindyada
sangha shastrena,
spriyam
dehe nuye chatam. Antakale tu purusha, agate gata sadvasaha, chindyada sangha shastrena, spriyam dehe nuye chatam. Antakale tu purusha, agate gata sadvasaha, chindyada sangha shastrena, spriham dehe nuye chatam. Word for word, antakale, at the last stage of life. Tu, but, purushaha, a person, agate, having arrived. Gata, sorry, gata sadvasaha. Without any fear of death, chindya, must cut off, asanga, non-attachment, shastrena, by the weapon of, spriham, all desires, dehe, in the matter of the material tabernacle, anu, pertaining, ye, all that, cha, also, tam, then. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace Shri A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Shri Prabhupada. Translation. At the last stage of one's life, one should be bold enough not to be afraid of death, but one must cut off all attachment to the material body and everything pertaining to it and all desires thereof. So it's a long purport, like a 2.5-page purport. So I'll read it out. Purport. The foolishness of gross materialism is that people think of making a permanent settlement in this world, although it is a settled fact that one has to give up everything here that has been created by valuable human energy. Great statesmen, scientists, philosophers, etc., who are foolish, without any information of the spirit soul, think that this life of a few years only is all in all, and that there is nothing more after death. This poor fund of knowledge, even in the so-called learned circles of the world, is killing the vitality of human energy, and the awful result is being keenly felt. And yet, the foolish materialistic men do not care about what is going to happen in the next life. The preliminary instruction in the Bhagavad Gita is that one should know that the identity of the individual living entity is not lost even after the end of this present body, which is nothing but an outward dress only. As one changes an old garment, so the individual living being also changes his body, and this change of body is called death. Death is therefore a process of changing the body at the end of the duration of the present life. An intelligent person must be prepared for this and must try to have the best type of body in the next life. The best type of body is a spiritual body, which is obtained by those who go back to the kingdom of God or enter the realm of Brahman. In the second chapter of this canto, this matter will be broadly discussed. But as far as the change of body is concerned, one must prepare now for the next life. Foolish people attach more importance to the present temporary life, and thus the foolish leaders make appeals to the body and the bodily relations. The bodily relations extend not only to this body, but also to the family members, wife, children, society, country, and so many other things which end at the end of life. After death, one forgets everything about the present bodily relations. We have a little experience of this at night when we go to sleep. While sleeping, we forget everything about this body and bodily relations. Although this forgetfulness is a temporary situation for only a few hours, death is nothing but sleeping for a few months in order to develop another term of bodily encagement, which we are awarded by the law of nature according to our aspiration. Therefore, one has only to change the aspiration during the course of this present body. And for this, there is need of training in the current duration of human life. This training can be begun at any stage of life, or even a few seconds before death. But the usual procedure is for one to get the training from the very early life, from the stage of brahmacharya, and gradually progress to the grihastha, vanaprastha and sannyas orders of life. The institution which gives such training is called Varnashram Dharma, or the system of Sanatan Dharma, the best procedure for making the human life perfect. One is therefore required to give up the attachment to family or social or political life just at the age of 50 years, if not earlier. And the training in the Vanaprastha and Sannyas ashrams is given for the preparation of the next life. Foolish materialists, in the garb of leaders of the people in general, stick to family affairs without attempting to cut off relations with them. And thus, they become victim of law or nature's law and get cross bodies again, according to their work. Such foolish leaders may have some respect from the people at the end of life, but that does not mean that such leaders will be immune to the natural laws under which everyone is tightly bound by the hands and feet. The best thing is, therefore, that everyone voluntarily give up family relations by transferring the attachment from family, society, country, and everything thereof to the devotional service of the Lord. It is stated herein that one should give up all desires of family attachment. One must have a chance for better desires. Otherwise, there is no chance of giving up such morbid desires. Desire is the concomitant factor of the living entity. The living entity is eternal, and therefore its desires, which are natural for a living being, are also eternal. One cannot, therefore, stop desiring, but the subject matter for desires can be changed. So one must develop the desire for returning home, back to Godhead, and automatically the desires for material gain, material honor, and material popularity will diminish in proportion to the development of devotional service. A living entity is meant for service activities, and his desires are centered around such a service attitude, beginning from the top executive head of the state down to the insignificant pauper in the street. All are rendering some sort of service to others. The perfection of such a service attitude is only attained simply by transferring the desire of service from matter to spirit or from Satan to God. Translation: At the last stage of one's life, one should be bold enough not to be afraid of death, but one must cut off all attachment to the material body and everything pertaining to it and all desires thereof. Om Jnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshuramrutam Yenam Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Shri Vasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna. So here it's being mentioned that at the last stage of life, one should be bold enough not to be afraid of death. So our life is a preparation for death. And this is the stage at which we all have to come when we are quitting a body. So Maharaj Parikshit, he's actually at this stage because he was given a notice of 7 days to live, 7 more days to live. And after that, the snake bird would come and bite him, and that would be the end of his present body. So at the last stage of his life, he gave up his kingdom, his family, his position, his name, his fame, his royal dress, all the things with which we identify with. He gave up all those things and he sat on the banks of the Ganges to fast until death. And what he was doing in the meanwhile was hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. And he's actually on this platform. And he's actually bold enough not to be afraid of death. So this is what we all have to come to at the end of our lives. This is what the platform we have to come to, because death is for sure. You know, the saying, taxes and death are for sure. One could avoid taxes, but one cannot avoid death, no matter who one is. So death is for sure. So we are going to die, and the Shastras encourage us to be in this state of consciousness, because we came with nothing and we will go with nothing. So death is the last stage of one's bodily existence. As we know, the body goes through various transformations. We go through various stages. We take birth. The material body takes birth. Then it grows. It produces byproducts. Children, it stays for some time. Then it ages, dwindles, and then finally it vanishes. So these are the different stages the body goes through. And even Krishna says this basic knowledge right in the beginning of the Bhagavad Gita. He says that one who has taken his birth is sure to die. And after death, one is sure to take birth again. So that's just the law of nature. But the thing is that the jiva is eternal. So the spirit soul is deathless. And Krishna says that in the Bhagavad Gita. Avinashi tu tadvidi yena sarvam idam tatam vinasham aveyasyasya nakashtit kartu marhati. And Krishna says that which pervades the entire body you should know to be indestructible. And no one is able to destroy that imperishable soul. So by nature we are eternal. The jiva is eternal, or the atma is eternal. But we are caught up in a body which is temporary. So there's this, we are in this dichotomy, and where we are by nature eternal, Satchidananda, we are eternal, full of bliss and full of knowledge. But here we are stuck in a body which is the exact opposite of that. So the material body is diametrically opposite to the nature of the soul. So the soul is Satchidananda, and the body, if we try to understand the nature of the body, we know it's not eternal. We take birth and then one day we die. There's so many, you know, crematoriums around. You can see it's over there. It says such and such took birth on such and such date, and such date this person expired and he's here. The remains are here. Or in some customs they burn the body, or in some places they give the body to other living entities to eat. So the body is temporary. And then we have a desire to experience ananda, or unending bliss. But the very nature of this world is that it gives suffering. That's the nature of this world. So we see in our pursuit of happiness, we encounter so much distress. In fact, as Prahlad Maharaj says, the more people try to aspire for happiness, the more they endeavor for happiness, the more they experience distress. So it's the situation is diametrically opposite. So we are in a place of it's temporary, and there's the struggle for existence, and in our quest for happiness, we experience so much distress, and we have to struggle to acquire knowledge. So the spirit soul, by nature, is full of knowledge. And what is that knowledge? The knowledge is, basically, I'm a servant of Krishna, and everything belongs to Krishna. This is real knowledge, and this energy belongs to Krishna. But in the material world, we have to struggle to acquire knowledge, and there are so many fields of knowledge, and one can only acquire so much knowledge in one's lifetime. So, and there's that constant struggle. So we have to go to school right from the beginning of our life, and that way we learn different fields of knowledge. So we say we are in a very strange situation, and this death is imposed upon us. So the Srimad Bhagavatam explains the origin of death in the third canto in Maitreya's teachings to Vidura. He explains about the origin of nescience. So there's this verse, Sasa jagre andha tamisram atha tamisram adikrit maha moham cha tamas jagya vrittaya. So there it says that Brahma first created the nascent engagements like self-deception, the sense of death, anger after frustration, the sense of false ownership, and the illusory bodily conception or forgetfulness of one's real identity. So, as we know, Krishna, he is the source of everything. He is the source of matter and spirit. So Krishna is also the source of this material world. So through the Vishnus, Krishna takes care of the creation, maintenance and annihilation of this world. And Brahma is in charge of the secondary creation. So the primary creation is done by the Vishnus, and then Brahma takes care of the secondary creation. So we know Mahavishnu, he glances on Prakriti, material nature, and then material nature manifests from an unmanifest state, and then the living entities are impregnated in that. Time is there, time comes into being, time is put in there, and then the modes of nature come and the whole creation takes place, and this egg comes and gradually the elements manifest and the whole thing manifests. And then Mahavishnu, in his other expansion as a Karna Dakshaya Vishnu, he enters into each universe, and then he fills the universe, half of the universe, with his own perspiration, and then he reclines in that on Ananta Shesh, and then this lotus flower emanates from his navel. The stem emanates, and then there's a flower, and there's Brahma on top of that. So then Brahma's job is to further create the universe. So he does the function of the secondary creation. And part of his job is also to give living entities their various bodies and to make them function in illusion, basically, get them to function in illusion. Because the desire of the living entities is to come to the material world to experience how it is to be like Krishna. That's why we all are here. That's the bottom line. So the conditioned living entity wants to be like Krishna. So in the spiritual world it's not possible, because there Krishna is the center. That position is taken. Only in the material world we can try to be like Krishna. So the living entity is put in the material world. The purport to this verse, Srila Prabhupada explains that first Krishna checks the living entity in the spiritual world from falling down. Krishna tries to convince him that, you know, don't go there, you know, don't try to enjoy separately. But because the jiva persists in the sinful desire, which is to enjoy separately, then Krishna has to let go, and then Krishna hands over to the material energy. So Brahma's job is to create the nascent engagements, which are mentioned here. Self-perception, the sense of death, anger after frustration, the sense of false ownership, and the illusory bodily conception. So Brahma created all this. All these nascent engagements, all this ignorance, Brahma helped Krishna in creating that. And in the next verse it mentions that though Brahma did that, he feels like such a misleading creation, he saw it as such a misleading creation as a sinful task. So Brahma, you know, he didn't want to do it, but he had to do it. So he saw this as a, you know, sinful act in which he's misleading so many living entities into thinking they are the body. And that's the cause of all kinds of suffering. But then Brahma purifies himself by meditating on the Lord and understanding why he's doing that activity, because that's a service to Krishna. So it's a thankless task which Brahma is performing of creating these nascent engagements. So one of them is the sense of death. So that's where, you know, this death comes from. So the first condition is, when the jiva comes in the material world, is forgetfulness of one's identity. That's the first thing what happens. So the first thing which happens is self-deception, which Brahma created. One forgets one's identity and one identifies with the body very strongly. I'm a male, I'm a female, I'm from here, I'm from there. This bodily identification becomes very, very strong. And then when one very strongly identifies with the body, then the next stage takes place, which is the sense of death. The second condition is then one is fearful of death. Because when one clings or hangs on so tightly to the body, then if that is one's conception of identity, then one naturally won't want to lose that. Because as spirit soul, we want to live forever. But when we identify with the body as the self, then we want to live in this body forever. So naturally one doesn't want to give it up. So then all these things follow one after the other. So this sense of false ownership, this so-called proprietorship, is because of, again, identifying with the body. So whatever one identifies, it's the extension of the bodily identification. So we have this false ego. This false ego runs on two tracks. Janasya moho yam aham mameti. So one of the tracks is I am. And then the second track is this is mine. So these are the two tracks on which the false ego runs. So I am this and this is mine. Janasya moho yam aham mameti. So I am the doer, I am the karta, and then everything in relationship to me is mine. So this is the basis of our, you know, illusory life. So Brahma had to create all this in order to facilitate our being in this world. Because if he doesn't create this, how can we forget that we are servants of Krishna? So he had to do this. Otherwise, we'll remember we are servant of Krishna. And then we cannot enjoy separately from Krishna. So in order to enjoy separately from Krishna, Brahma had to create all these nascent engagements. So this is the bedrock foundation of material life. So here, it's Prabhupada in the purport. So we discussed about how death is the last stage of one's bodily existence. The spirit soul is eternal, but we are caught in this body, and we discussed the origin and reason for death. And here also Prabhupada explains in the purport that he compares death to going to sleep. So we have this experience. Every night we sleep, or maybe even during the day we sleep. So when we sleep, what happens? We forget the reality. We forget the awake reality. So we forget who we are, where we are, and you know, we forget our conception of who we are, what our existence. But then we are in a totally different kind of world. We identify with something else. So when we wake up, we remember, oh yeah, I'm such and such, I'm in such and such body, this is what I'm doing. So death is like the same thing. So when we die, we are just sleeping for a few months. And in those few months, our next body is actually being decided. So in those few months, usually a lot of living entities, they go to the planet of Yamraj, where they're getting punished. And then there's a judgment made, okay, you're going to such and such planet, you're getting such and such body according to your karma. So this is all which is happening. So these days a lot of people say that actually I'm not afraid of death. And here it mentions that at the last stage of one's life, one should be bold enough not to be afraid of death. But the fact is, everyone is afraid of death, because that's according to Shastra. Shastra is saying that. Here even Brahma is saying the sense of death. He, Brahma, created that. So how can one say they're not afraid of death? As long as one is identifying with the body, there has to be fear of death. Otherwise one is just bluffing. Unless one is on the Brahma Bhuta platform, then it's a different thing. So this fear of death is there for every conditioned soul. And everyone is afraid of death. Why? Because we are so strongly identifying with this body. So in the 11th canto, it says, the cause of fear is explained in the 11th canto. Bhayam dvitiya bhini veshata syat ishad apetasya viprayayos asmritihi. So fear arises when a living entity misidentifies himself as the material body because of absorption in the external illusory energy of the Lord. And when the living entity turns away from the Supreme Lord, he also forgets his own constitutional position as a servant of the Lord. This bewildering, fearful condition is affected by the potency for illusion called Maya. So this fear is there because of forgetting our connection with Krishna. So that's when we absorb ourselves in the dvitiya, or the second energy, which is matter, then we forget our real identity, and that's the cause of fear. And we can see in today's society, fear is all pervasive. You know, people are fearful of some asbestos, or it's just an example. Or people are fearful of wars. People are fearful of other people. You know, fearful of expressing their heart in a relationship, or they've had bad experiences and then they're fearful. People are fearful of wars, unemployment, terrorism, you know, nuclear war, crime. There's so many things people are fearful of. So it's like fear, and especially fear is very prominent in the lower species of life. If you look at a bird is fearful all the time. It's just looking right, left, up and down. You know, you can see that in the courtyard when birds come. But they are fearful, you know, who's going to attack me? So fear is all pervasive in the material world. And even in the human form of life, and especially in modern society, its fear is becoming more and more pervasive. And then, and some people say they are not afraid of death. How is that possible? And people try to overcome all these fears by making all these so-called arrangements. So by arrangements in the form of society, country, family, you know, friends, they will protect me at the time of death. Or one could say, I have a, you know, private health insurance, So I can, that will protect me. You know, I'm paying all this premium and that will protect me. So I have a, you know, good insurance cover, and if anything happens, they are supposed to, you know, system will protect me. But actually nothing can protect one from the jaws of death. As Krishna says, kalosmi lokakshaya krit pravrido, that time I am a destroyer of everything. And mrityu sarva harasraham. And Krishna is death for those who have no faith in God. So Krishna is death. He destroys everything. Whatever one accumulates and possesses for one's whole life, it's taken away by death. And death does not wait for anyone. When it comes, it comes. One has to surrender. So in material life, one can never enjoy. Because, first of all, it's whatever we desire, we don't get it. That's generally the case. Whatever one desires, it's very hard to get it. One doesn't get what one wants. And even if one gets what one wants, one has to struggle very hard. Or even one doesn't have to struggle very hard and gets what one wants, then everything is taken away at the time of death. So time of death just comes knocking. And then one has to... One cannot say, you know, please extend my life. All one's plans are finished. So the tragedy in today's society is that people think that at the time after death, everything is finished. Or at the time of death, everything is finished. That's the current understanding. This is the atheistic understanding in the modern world. That people think when we die, everything is finished. So I don't need to worry. I can do whatever I want to do. You know, there's no sinful reactions. And I can live my life in any way I want to. And that's the understanding which is there, and people are basing their lives on that. As Prabhupada would say, even so many great so-called scholars and statesmen and learned people, they don't know that our identity is the spirit soul. And Prabhupada, you know, many times in his conversations, he would talk about this Professor Kotswaki. Kotovsky from Russia. Russian names are very hard, at least for me. Even the names of the towns and cities are very long. So Professor Kotovsky, is that right? Yeah, okay. So when Prabhupada went to Russia, he met this professor and they had a conversation. And then this professor said that, you know, Swamiji, at the time of death, everything is finished. And Prabhupada would say, just see, such big professors, they do not even know that, they do not even know the basic knowledge. We are Atma, we are spirit soul. And we are going to, when we die, we carry on into our next body according to our desires and karma. So this current civilization is about just eat, drink and be merry. You know, this is the philosophy of Charvaka Muni. So Charvaka Muni, he would say, where is it gone? Because Vedic civilization was based on the cow. So, you know, ghee. But it's the same thing, more or less, what people today are saying. I had copied the Sanskrit here somewhere. Does anyone know the Sanskrit? Okay, thank you, Prabhu. So basically Charvaka Muni's philosophy is take ghee and enjoy. Eat ghee as much as you can and enjoy. Because in Vedic culture, all preparations are made out of ghee. And especially in Vedic culture, enjoyment means, a lot of enjoyment is in eating. So we can even see, our Prabhupada said this is the kitchen religion, and so much of our program is centered around eating. So in Vedic culture, happiness meant eating. So he said, okay, you know, just take ghee, as much ghee as you can, and enjoy. Then the person would ask, okay, where will I get all this ghee from? He said, don't worry, just beg, borrow or steal. Then one would say, okay, but you know, that's a sinful activity if I beg, borrow or steal, and I'll be committing so many sinful activities. He said, don't worry, because at the time of death, everything is finished. So you don't need to worry about sinful reactions. So that's the atheistic philosophy of Charvaka Muni. And that philosophy is even very prevalent today. So that, you know, do whatever you want to do. Just live in the moment and feel good. Whatever you're doing, you should feel good. And it should satisfy your senses. And that's life. And in the process, just do a little bit of good, you know, do some charity here and there. And your intention should be good for others. But, you know, a few people get hurt here and there. What to do? But you did your best. So there's no reactions. But at least I had a good intention and I gave some charity. So people think like that. And that's an atheistic mentality. So as here it says that one should be bold enough not to be afraid of death. But the reality is everyone is afraid of death. And there's actually a term for that. And the term is called thanatophobia. Is a term. Thanatophobia, which means that some people have a phobia or fear of death to the degree that they cannot even function properly. They're all the time there is thinking of death. So if they see a tomb, it reminds them of death. Or if they see a funeral, it reminds them of death, and remind everyone, but it really consumes their whole existence. So some people have a phobia like that, many people. So but actually everyone has this phobia. So a lot of people are fearful of death because there's the fear of the unknown. So people don't know what's going to happen. You know, I'm at the time of death, everything is taken away. One's prestige, one's status, social standing, position, you know, body, you know, paraphernalia, everything is taken away. And then one doesn't know where one is going. So there's the, a lot of people have, everyone has this fear of unknown. Then there's the fear of the loss of control. I'm not in control of the situation. Because in material life, we like to be in control. So here we are there, everything is falling apart, we have no control over the situation. So there's the fear of loss of control. And there's the fear of pain, you know. A lot of people fear death also because it's a very painful situation. So it's, Shastra describes it's like, how many thousand scorpions biting you? Huh? 40,000, okay. One scorpion bite is painful enough. So there's so many, there's nothing called a peaceful death. As people think, you know, I'm lying in my bed at home and there's music playing and I die in my sleep. It's, you know, the scorpions will still be biting you. So it's a painful situation. And then people have fear about their relatives. What will happen to my children, my, you know, my parents or my grandchildren? So a lot of, you know, old people, they're thinking about their dependents. They're not thinking about where they're going to go. So as Prabhupada mentions that the current civilization is making a vain attempt at making a permanent settlement in this world. So we see that the Duratmas or the cripple-minded people, they are trying to make a permanent settlement in this world. Though this world is temporary by nature, but they're trying to live here permanently. And you can see that in their actions. If they might not say out loud, in their actions you can see that. You know, you can look at all the houses around here. People, you know, build swimming pools, big houses, or even if it's a small house, decorated very nicely and make all these arrangements as if they're going to live here forever. So the nature of this world is that one has to work. So in the spiritual world, everyone is serving Krishna. That's our activity. But in the material world, we all have to work to fulfill our material needs, to fulfill our material necessities. So the whole idea is how to work in such a way that one focuses only on one's, mainly on spiritual needs, and material needs also have to be taken care of, but it's not the main thing. So in today's society we see this, as Rupa Goswami explains, atyahara prayasascha. So because of this atyahara, there is so much prayas or endeavor. So this atyahara means overeating, or it can also mean over-collecting. So that's what atyahara means. So we see that today everyone has this disease of over-collecting. And Prabhupada gives a very simple example. He says, if there's a bag of grains lying on the street, birds will come and eat as much as they want. When their stomach is full, they'll go away. Or animals. But a human being will come and take the whole bag and put it in his home. So that means atyahara, over-collecting. So current modern civilization is all about atyahara, and it's and in fact people are seen as producing and consuming machines. They call, there's a term for that, homo economicus, that people are seen as machines meant for producing and consuming from the economic point of view. Economics, they, in economists, they give this term that people are merely a pleasure machine, and they just want to consume and produce. So, and therefore there's this disease of atyahara, or over-collecting. So, people are collecting more than what they need. And when you collect more than what you need, you have to endeavor for all that. That's what happens. So today's society is pushing people to collect more and more. In fact, that's how the economy is set up. So the moment the consumer stops spending, the entire economy will collapse, because we are living in a debt-based economy. In other words, unless there is more and more debt or loans taken out, unless more and more new credit is issued into society, existing credit will shrink, and then there will be recession, or there will be deflation of the economy, like a balloon deflates. So then the entire economy will collapse. So the moment people stop spending, or if a lot of people start saving, then they are, you know, holding the money supply. So the money supply is not there, and then people can't pay off their loans. Because in today's society, money is only created when someone takes out a loan. That's the reality. That's how it's set up. So when you take a loan out in the form of, you know, you take a credit card, you spend that, that's like a loan. Or you take a home loan, or a car loan, or a business loan, then new money is pumped into the economy. And then people, and when then they add an interest charge over that, which they don't create. So the entire equation is wrong. So people have to, the point I'm making is, the moment people stop spending, the entire economy will collapse. So people are pushed to spend, or pushed to over-collect in what they need. So that's why there's so much, the advertising and marketing industry is so big today. Because if people stop spending, there's going to be a recession. And all of us will also be affected by it, because we are living, because we are accepting their money supply. So everyone gets affected. But the point is, in so much consumption, there's so much endeavor, so much industry set up, and everyone has to work so hard to get money, to create money, and then people get all these goods and products which they have to pay off. So today, credit cards are so easily available. So it's a credit, you know, you can spend on whatever you want, buy things you don't need. You know, if you have a car, you have to change it after every year, or, you know, change your phones even if you don't need to, or, you know, buy new clothes even if you don't need to. You know, so it's all about change. Get new. And the whole, what happens is, there is so much prayas, as Rupa Goswami says, atyahara prayasastra. So over collection leads to over endeavor. So the only endeavor is meant for Krishna consciousness. That's what the human endeavor is meant for. So if we don't endeavor for Krishna service, then we will be forced to endeavor for mundane things. That's how it is. So as Prabhupada says, because of over-collecting, people misuse the intelligence to produce so many unnecessary and unwanted things. Thus factories, slaughterhouses, brothels and liquor shops are opened. This is all because of over-endeavor and over-collection. So in fact, as our life is meant for dharmasya hi apavargasya, nartho arthayo pakalpate, narthasya dharmakantasya, kamo labhaya hi smitaha. That in all occupational engagements are certainly meant for liberation. They should never be performed for material gain. So if we are working, the gain should be used for Krishna conscious activities, not for sense gratification. And furthermore, according to sages, one who is engaged in the ultimate occupational service should never use material gain to cultivate sense gratification. So as here it says, Prabhupada says in the purport that today's society is the blind leading the blind. So all this so much ignorance is prevalent because of our blind leaders. So people have this wrong understanding because of our blind leaders. So this is this verse in the Ishopanishad, Mantra 9. Andham tama pravishanti ye avidyam upasate tato bhuya ivate tamo yatu vidyayam rataha. That those who engage in ignorant activities, they go in hell, but worse are those who put forward such knowledge. So we see that these philosophers, these statesmen, these scientists, or these academia, they are the ones who are putting forward, these politicians, they are pushing forward this program of ignorance. And they are our leaders. So Prabhupada wanted to change the face of human society. So one of the aims of ISKCON, or one of the seven purposes of ISKCON, is to systematically propagate spiritual knowledge to society at large and to educate all people in the techniques of spiritual life, in order to check the imbalance of values in life and to achieve real unity and peace in the world. So that's one of our purposes, to systematically propagate spiritual knowledge. So to counteract all these scientists, Prabhupada established the Bhaktivedanta Institute. You know, Prabhupada wanted learned devotees who know this material science to be able to convince the scientists and the leaders. Because if some of them are convinced, they can have a big impact on so many people. Because people take our scientists and philosophers and politicians as our leaders. So if some of them can be convinced, then so many others can be convinced. So this verse, Nate vidu svartha gatimi vishnu durashaye bahir artha manina andha yathande upaniya manas te pesha tantriyam urudamni bhada. So andha yathande upaniya manas. That andha yathande upaniya manas means that blind leading the blind. So today's society is our blind leaders are leading blind, and everyone is falling in the ditch of hell. Unfortunately. So one of the aims of ISKCON is to deliver mankind by preaching Krishna consciousness. So our business is to preach Krishna consciousness in whatever shape or form we can. So for different devotees it's different forms. So some it's Harinam, Prasadam distribution, or you know, doing university preaching, book distribution. Especially, you know, distribution of literature is very, very important. It supports all of the other forms of preaching. So, this one, last point, as Prabhupada mentions that this human form of life is meant for training to become fearless at the point of death. One can do it in one moment, or one could even do it in one moment, as Prabhupada says. And in the previous verses, the example of Khatmanga Maharaj is given. So Khatmanga Maharaj when he realized he had only one moment to live, he surrendered to Krishna in a moment and he became fully Krishna conscious. But for the most of us, it takes many, many lifetimes for the bulk of us. And the Shastra recognizes that, and therefore we have Varnashram Dharma. So Varnashram Dharma is the four Varnas and the four Ashramas. So the is the Brahmachari, Grihastha, Vanaprastha, Sannyas, Brahman, Kshatriya, Vaishya and Shudra. So there's the four Varnas and four Ashramas. The whole idea is to gradually elevate the conditioned living entity to bring to the point of Krishna consciousness. So the stage of sannyas, one has to be fearless. So abhayam, sattva, samshuddhir. So in the stage of sannyas, one has to be fearless of everything. So that's why sannyasis traditionally would be in the forest traveling by themselves, and they would be fearless. They would just depend on the super soul in the heart. So one has to come to that level, and usually it takes some time. So therefore, there's this scientific division of brahmacharya, grihastha, vanaprastha and sannyas. So, and if you closely study all the four ashrams, only in one ashram there is the license for enjoyment, which is the grihastha ashram. And the other three ashrams, there is no license for enjoyment. So in brahmacharya, vanaprastha and sannyas, there is no sex life. So only in the grihastha ashram, there is restricted association with the opposite sex. There is a license to enjoy. So there is a time for attachment in one's life, and then there is a time for detachment. So traditionally the training would begin right from one's childhood. So at the age of 4, this training would begin. Age of 4 or 5, until the age of 25. So that would be brahmacharya life. So that's a good solid, you know, 21 years or 22 years of training. So the whole idea is that, or if someone can remain a naishik brahmachari, you know, well and good. They avoid a lot of trouble. They can just, you know, focus on their service, and they can just focus on their Krishna consciousness. You know, without worrying about anything else, without worrying about economic development. So you can just focus on that. And they save a lot of time. So if someone can do that, that's good. And but for most people, they have to go through the grihastha ashram. So the whole idea is in brahmachari life, 22 years traditionally, one would get a very strong foundation because they're doing it for so many years. You know, you get a very good foundation in spiritual life. So one learns, it's character building. One learns sense control. For men, the main training is sense control. They learn about Brahman, or they learn about Krishna, and they learn that this material world is not our home. It's not a real home. And in fact, we have to leave this world and go back to Krishna in the spiritual world. And for women, their main training is to learn chastity. Not that they don't learn other things, they also learn all those things. So they learn chastity, you know, cooking. Men also learn all those things. But the main thing is the sense control. So when one gets married, one enters the grihastha ashram, so one still carries the same consciousness. That's the whole idea. And then the whole idea is to eventually even give that up, as Prabhupada mentioned in the purport, that at the last stage of life, at the age of 50, one should give that up. So traditionally at the age of 50, one would quit household life and then enter into vanaprastha, and they travel with the wife, various places of pilgrimage, and then later take sannyas. So in the last stage, one would fully depend upon God, upon Krishna. So if one is in one's comfortable setting, it's hard to... one can still depend. But when one is out of one's comfortable setting, then one really depends on Krishna. So the sannyasis, they would like travel from one place to another, and depending for one's subsistence upon the Lord. If someone can do that, that's good. But if someone can't do that, one can still stay in household life and practice Krishna consciousness. And there's nothing wrong in that. So do you have any questions or comments? Many kinds of?
Hells,
okay. Yeah.
So how does it all come into play? When does the soul go to hell and when does it take rebirth? How does it all?
Okay, that's Yamaraj's department. He decides who goes to hell or in which hell. So basically it depends on one's activities. If one has engaged in vikarma activities or activities which are not sanctioned by the scripture, then one has to suffer for that. And you can read the 5th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, that there's a whole description of the hellish planets and for what sinful activity what one goes to, what kind of hell. That's all described there. You can read that. Is that
the
answer?
The soul can either go to hell or
instantly go. Yeah, one can either go to hell or any of this, or any of the planets in the material creation, from Brahmaloka down to, you know, hellish planets, or one can even go back to Godhead if one is Krishna conscious. Yes, Prabhu. Yeah.
So, what do you think somebody does that sinful activity out of ignorance? Is that going to be a lesser punishment in hell or with heavenly knowledge?
Yeah. When one commits sinful activity in knowledge, yeah, then the punishment is greater. And even like one who pushes forward the program of ignorance, then the punishment is greater, as it says in Ishapanishad, that the people who are putting forward this atheistic philosophies and those who are misleading others, their punishment is more than those who are just engaged in gross sinful activities. Yeah, so you know, just like for example, if someone comes here, say if a devotee, you know, goes and kicks that mridanga, or say a non-devotee comes here and just goes and kicks that mridanga, it will be a, you know, one will get a reaction because this is Krishna's property. It's Balaram, manifestation of Balaram. So there will be a reaction. But if a devotee goes and kicks it, the reaction will be much worse because the devotee knows this is Lord Balaram. This is Krishna's internal potency. So we have kicked that. So the reaction is much more because you have the knowledge and one has misused that knowledge. So then the reaction is greater. And that's why Prabhupada said that Indians will suffer more than others. Because India is the land of Dharma and they have the knowledge but they are ignoring it. So the punishment is greater. Okay. Okay. Thank you very much, Prabhupada ki.